Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fade Into You by Tracy Wolfe, narrated by Rachel Woods. Chapter 1. Jesus, he needed a fix. He wasn't supposed to want one. Had, in fact, just spent 10 weeks he could ill afford, and $200,000 that he could, making sure that he wouldn't want one. Nice to know that rehab shit was working out just about as well as he'd expected. Which was to say, not fucking at all. So much for third time being the charm. After flipping off the bathroom light, he bent over the sink and splashed cold water on his face, ran a wet hand over the back of his neck, rolled his shoulders, stretched out his back, concentrated on anything and everything but the 3-ton elephant sharing the tiny bathroom with him. It was pretty fucking hard to do when the damn thing felt like it was sitting on his chest. Oh yeah, that wasn't an elephant. That was the fucking addiction. How could he forget?
Hey, Wyatt? You okay in there?
Shit. He hadn't even been gone 5 minutes. What the fuck did they think he was doing? Shooting up with the liquid soap? Or just smoking the dried flowers in the arrangement hanging above the towel rack. Then again, if he got desperate enough, it was nice to know he had options, which was probably what his friends were afraid of. Struggling to keep the resentment out of his voice, after all, it wasn't Jameson's fault he was such a fuck-up, he couldn't be trusted to go to the fucking bathroom by himself, he called to the woman who was half best friend, half little sister, rolled into one. Yeah, I'll be out in a minute.
Okay, sweetie. Let me know if you need anything.
He supposed asking for a couple of grams of heroin was out of the question. More was the fucking pity. Then again, with the way he was feeling, he'd settle for just a few points. Maybe even one or two. It wouldn't get him to the nodding out stage. His tolerance was too high for that. But it'd take the edge off. Right now, that was all he wanted. Something to ease the razor-sharp need slicing through his veins, through his lungs, through his head. Something to make it a little easier to turn the light on and face himself in the fucking mirror. It had been a long time since he'd faced the world stone-cold sober, and after being out of rehab for exactly 6 hours and 27 minutes, he couldn't say he recommended it. Then again, there wasn't a whole lot about his life that he would recommend right now. Even the music that had been playing in the back of his head since he walked out the front doors of the rehab center, a free man, seemed flat, the notes discordant, and just plain off. But that didn't matter. It couldn't matter. After all, it wasn't like he could spend the rest of the night hiding in here like the total pussy he was rapidly becoming. They hadn't snuck in the back door of this Fifth Street club for shits and giggles, after all. The guys had been auditioning bass players for the last few weeks, and it was time to test out one of their top picks at a surprise show. Time to test him out, too. Time to see if he still had what it took, now that he was a sniveling, sober mess. Not that any of the guys would put it that way, or even so much as mention that this was a kind of audition for him, too. But how could it not be? After the shit he'd put them through the last few years, it was a fucking miracle they hadn't decided to replace him right along with Micah. God knew their management and label would probably have thrown a fucking parade if they had. But the remaining shaken dirty guys were nothing if not loyal. And since he had no plans to fuck either Ryder's or Quinn's fiancé, like Micah had Jared's, it didn't look like they planned on turning their backs on him anytime soon. He was grateful for that loyalty, even if he didn't feel like he'd done anything to deserve it, especially in recent months. The noise in his head was getting too loud, the recriminations and the sorrow too clear, so he turned the faucet back on and splashed water on his face again, and noticed, for the first time, just how badly his hands were shaking. If he didn't know better, he'd think the DTs had gotten a hold of him again. A second knock came at the door, and fuck it. Just fuck it. He was getting the hell out of this bathroom. Now. Before all of Shaken Dirty decided to take up a residence in here with him. I'm coming, he said, grabbing a paper towel from the dispenser and dried off. Then he took a deep breath, put on his fucking game face, and yanked the door open with way more force than was warranted. There was a part of him that'd been expecting the whole band to be in the hallway waiting for him, looking him over for new needle tracks or blown-out pupils. But in the end, it was just Jameson waiting, doing her level best to pretend she wasn't checking up on him.
"Sorry to rush you," she said with a grin, "but I really have to pee."
Oh, right. He stepped out of the doorway, even as he held the bathroom door open for her. "Sorry I took so long, Jellybean."
"No problem."
She glanced into the dark bathroom curiously.
"Is the light bulb out?"
"No."
"Oh."
This time, her curious look was leveled at him.
"Why didn't you turn the light on? It's pitch black in there."
Since he couldn't tell her the truth, that it was easier in the dark because he didn't have to look himself in the mirror, he just shrugged. She seemed to get it anyway, her face softening as she pulled him in for a warm, tight hug. Then again, he'd never had to tell Jameson anything, had he? Little sister of Jared, Shaken Dirty's lead guitarist, and now fiancé to their lead singer, Ryder, she'd been around since they'd been in high school, rehearsing cover songs in her and Jared's parents' garage, dreaming of writing their own songs, and maybe even hitting the big time. Well, they'd hit the big time, all right, and everything had fallen to shit around them, including him. Maybe especially him.
"It's going to be okay,"
Jameson whispered as she held him close.
"You've got this, Wyatt. I know you do."
Well, that made one of them. Not that he could say that to her. She'd been there every step of the way through rehab, and he didn't want to disappoint her, didn't want to let her down. Not when he'd already done that so many other times through the years. It was why he was here, using every ounce of willpower he had not to walk into the front of the house and score some horse or molly or even some weed. Something, anything, to take the edge off, to make it easier to breathe in his own skin. "I'm all right," he told her, pressing a kiss to the top of her head before untangling himself from the hug. "Go pee. I'll hang with the guys." As he walked away, he pretended he was totally fine, just like he pretended he couldn't feel her worried eyes tracing his every step. It worked, too, at least until he walked into the communal dressing room that doubled as the green room, and every single person there turned to look at him, like he was some kind of animal at the zoo that they'd paid $25 to gawk at. Oh, they were more subtle than tourists at the zoo, but he knew they were watching, knew they were worried. Ryder and Jared were arguing over the merits of Cap'n Crunch versus Cocoa Krispies, like there was even something to argue about. Crunchberries obviously ruled. But they kept glancing over at him when they thought he wasn't looking. Quinn, the band's keyboardist, was cuddling his woman, Elise, on his lap. And though he was nodding along to whatever she was saying, his gaze was pinned to Wyatt. And finally, Lee, the Austin bassist they were trying out tonight, to see if their sounds meshed during a live show, just kept staring at him, like he thought Wyatt was going to fuck up his one big chance. Which pretty much made Wyatt not like him on principle. But hey, who the fuck was he to judge anyone? Grinding his teeth, he pretended he didn't notice his bandmate's scrutiny as he moved deeper into the room. Yet another part of the program that was total bullshit. His shrink had spent much of the last 10 weeks telling him he needed to be authentic, that his feelings had value, that he needed to share those feelings with the people closest to him, even if it made him, or them, uncomfortable. What a total crock. The only thing he would accomplish by admitting to his best friends how badly he needed a fix was to freak them all out, not to mention have them crawl even deeper up his ass. As for Lee, there was no way he was saying anything in front of a guy he was already pretty sure wouldn't make the cut. It was a feeling that had nothing to do with how much he already disliked the guy. Or at least, that's what he was telling himself. Ducking his head, Wyatt made his way across the room to the small fridge in the corner. He pulled it open, hoping there was something in it besides beer. He wasn't thirsty, but a bottle of water would at least give him something to do with his hands until he got his sticks in them, and found that it was completely empty. There wasn't so much as a can of Coke for him to grab. Fuck it. Just fuck it. He closed the fridge door extra carefully, because what he really wanted to do was slam it, and took a few seconds to just breathe before turning around. It wasn't that the fridge was empty that bothered him. He wasn't that kind of diva, and never had been. But what bugged the shit out of him was that he knew it had been full when they'd gotten there. He'd seen Jared open it, had seen the bottles of beer lined up, one after the other. Which meant they'd taken the opportunity to get rid of all the alcohol in the room while he was in the bathroom. They didn't trust him, didn't have any more faith in him, and the program that he'd just completed, than he did. 10 weeks, close to $250,000, and more bullshit than he could ever hope to shovel. And the program hadn't worked worth a damn. He was still a junkie, still an alcoholic, still a failure who couldn't get, or keep, his shit together. He knew it, had known it from the moment he'd walked out of that damn rehab center this morning. So why the fuck did it bother him so much that his friends knew it too? "Hey, man," Quinn said, like he had a clue what Wyatt was thinking. "They're bringing us some soda from the FOH. Should be here any minute." He didn't have a chance in hell of forcing words past his clenched jaw or too tight throat, so he just nodded. Then he headed for the closest door, like hellhounds were nipping at his fucking heels. It turned out the closest door led outside, to the alley behind the club, thank Christ. He let the door slam behind him, then took a deep breath of the thick, humid air that permeated all of Austin in early September. Pulling a pack of cigarettes from his pocket, he lit one, took a long, deep drag, and fought the urge to hit the brick wall behind him until his knuckles broke and his fists bled. The only thing that stopped him was the knowledge that if he did it, if he gave in and shattered his hands and his life wide open, then he couldn't play tonight, and it would just be one more failure, one more fuck-up, one more way he let down the only people he gave a shit about in the whole fucking world. Chapter 2. Poppy Germain slid into the waiting limo, and its very welcome air conditioning, with a sigh of relief. It had been an absolutely insane day, one that started with a flight from New York to L.A. for a whirlwind round of meetings that had been cut short when she'd gotten the call from Caleb telling her to catch a plane to Austin ASAP. Austin wasn't in her itinerary for the week, but he'd said he needed her. And since being his older sister, by only 4 minutes, but still, was a responsibility she took very seriously, she dropped everything and run for the nearest airport. And now, here she was. But her relief at being out of Austin's stifling heat was short-lived, considering Caleb was supposed to be meeting/picking her up at the airport. And unless this limo had a couple of secret compartments, he was definitely not in it. Which was a problem, considering she had no idea what she was doing here. Pulling her cell phone out of her purse, she checked both her text messages and call log, but there was nothing from Caleb. A quick glance at her email told her there was nothing there either, though there was a fairly irate message from her father complaining about her harebrained penchant for running out on important meetings without notice. He didn't, of course, mention the fact that she'd held the meeting via telepresence as she'd raced to LAX, or that she'd rocked the meeting, putting together a marketing plan that made both the artist's management and the label's accountants happy. But then, why should he, when the only reason he'd given her control of marketing on this project was to see her fail? It was supposed to be his big shining proof that women shouldn't be record execs, that they were fine as admins and first or second level managers, but that they couldn't hold their own when it came to sitting in on the label's top decisions. Not because he was inherently sexist or anything. At least, that was his story, and he was sticking to it. But because the talent didn't take them seriously. Rockers and rappers weren't going to take orders from a woman. She'd tried to tell him a million times that this wasn't 1965, or even 1995. The new generation of rock stars would take seriously whoever made them famous and filled their bank accounts. She wasn't sure the guys she'd been dealing with today even knew she had a vagina. Her dad wasn't buying it, though. No daughter of his was ever going to run a record label. No, that was going to be Caleb's job. the fact that Caleb didn't want it, not to mention was hopelessly inept at everything but the accounting-slash-business side of things, didn't seem to matter in the slightest. He was going to get it, and she was going to be stuck trying desperately to prove herself to her father for many, many more years. Since dwelling on it only depressed her, she shoved thoughts of her dad out of her mind and concentrated instead on trying to figure out what the hell was up with Caleb. Glancing around impatiently, she was just thinking about getting out of the limo. Maybe she'd taken so long getting her luggage that he had gone into the airport looking for her, when the driver pulled smoothly away from the curb and into traffic. What the? Punching the intercom button, she told the driver, "Wait, we're still missing one person. My brother is supposed to meet me here."
"According to my itinerary, you're my only passenger."
That didn't make sense. "That's not possible. I don't even know where we're going." She was so going to kill Caleb when she got her hands on him again.
"I was told Antone's on Fifth Street. Is that not right?"
The driver didn't sound particularly worried. Antone's? They didn't have anyone playing there tonight, did they? She checked the schedule of artists and gigs that she updated every week and checked it. Nope. Nothing scheduled for Antone's that she was aware of. Still, Caleb wasn't known for sending her on wild goose chases. "No, Antone's is fine," she told the driver. "Thanks." Then she pulled her messages back up again. Still no texts and no phone calls. What the hell was Caleb up to? Googling Antone's website on her phone, she scrolled through their appearances list. There were a couple of good bands on there this month, bands she'd been keeping an eye on, but she'd never heard of the one they had scheduled for tonight, Fly By Night. A quick Google search showed they didn't even have a website. Weird. There were no reviews online. Nothing. She started to dig deeper, but then a text message from Caleb finally came in. The dick. "Caleb.
Hey, Soda Pop. Thanks for saving my ass."
"Me.
I haven't saved anything yet. What's going on?"
"Caleb, this is your shot."
"Me. Unless you mean tequila, I'm pretty sure I don't know what you're talking about."
"Shake and Dirty's auditioning a new bassist at Antone's tonight, in a pickup show that nobody knows about."
"Holy shit! Shake and Dirty? They're Fly By Night?"
Excitement roared through her, had her hand shaking and her heart pounding out of control. She'd been a fan of Shake and Dirty from the very beginning, had been the one to bring them to Caleb's attention when the two of them were still in college so that he could convince their dad to sign them, since she knew there was no way their father would take the recommendation from her. When they'd gone big, she'd celebrated with Caleb, and when they'd gone huge, he'd told her father that she'd been the one to pick them out, the one who'd insisted he listen to them. And her dad had still given all the praise to Caleb. No surprise there. Of course, when shit had gone bad and the band had nearly imploded a few months ago, he'd been right there ready to point the finger at her. He was great like that. Caleb had tried to stop the witch hunt, but no one talked Bill Germain into, or out of, anything once his mind was made up. So she hadn't protested the castigation or the bust in rank that came with it, because the last thing she'd wanted was their father's shit to land on Caleb. But it had been a bitter pill to swallow. Shake and Dirty was far from the first band to suffer from infighting and drug abuse, and it wasn't like she'd been allowed to have anything to do with them once they were signed anyway. That had been everyone else's job but hers. And now Shake and Dirty was back, ready to play? 2.5 months didn't seem long enough for them to really get their shit together. Or more precisely, for their drummer to get his shit together.
"Me. Why, it's out of rehab?"
"Caleb. Yeah, got out this morning."
And he was playing tonight? God knew things moved fast in this industry, but this was supersonic.
"Me. How is he?"
"Caleb. I don't know. That's kind of what today's about. Gauging that and checking out the new bassist."
"Me. They found a new bassist? Who is it?"
"Caleb. They're auditioning a new bassist, and it's Lee Marcos, from Firestarter."
"He's good."
"Yeah.
But not right for them."
"You haven't even heard how they sound together."
"Doesn't matter. His fingerings aren't good enough to keep up with Ryder, or even Jared.
He's going to look like an amateur up there.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Also, this is the start of a 3 to 6 month gig.
For Lee?
That was a disaster if ever she'd heard one.
Caleb.
No, for you.
On top of my regular duties, Dad's put me in charge of babysitting Wyatt for the next few months, making sure he stays out of trouble. My chance to prove I can handle the talent, he says. But since we both know I can't, I'll take over whatever duties of yours I can for a while, and you take over shaken dirty.
At her brother's words, Poppy's heart went from pounding too hard to nearly exploding. This was what she wanted, what she'd always wanted. A chance to work with the talent, to use the power of the record label to help them get everything they wanted, while proving to the label, to her father, that intense cooperation with the artists could be profitable for everyone. But still,
me. You want me to babysit Wyatt Jennings? Dad will flip.
Caleb, not if he understands it's the only way. Wyatt knows me, and I guarantee he'll figure out I'm a babysitter from the word go. And trust me, that I'll just mess him up more.
Me. So tell him you're there for something else. He doesn't have to know you're babysitting him.
Caleb. He's an addict, not an idiot. He'll see right through it. But Dad keeps you away from the top shelf talent. He doesn't know you.
Meaning what? You want me to lie to him about who I am?
That's exactly what I want you to do. It's the only way this will work. I don't want him to think we as a label don't have any faith in him, which is why I've set up a whole identity for you as their new social media consultant. You'll be documenting Shaken Dirty's journey from broken band to their first ever stadium tour, which kicks off at ACL in October. You'll be with them at least until November. You can thank me later.
Thank you? I can't be away from the office until November.
Sure you can. I've got it handled.
Again, Dad will freak.
Let me handle Dad. This is the perfect shot for you to do what you've always wanted to do, and to prove yourself to Dad. You need to take it. It's a win-win.
He was right. She knew he was right. If she walked away from this right now, she'd never get another chance. Not with the way Dad was riding Caleb to take more responsibility. And not with the way he was trying so hard to railroad her from marketing over to the accounting side of the business, as far from the artists as she could get. But still, her mind was reeling. She had so much to do, so many things she was responsible for. Was she really supposed to just hang out in Austin for months on end? And if she actually agreed to do this, how the hell was she supposed to keep one of Rock's baddest boys on the straight and narrow? Wyatt was known as a lot of things. Smart, charismatic, sexy as hell. But a rule follower? Definitely not in any description of him she'd ever read. Not to mention that she couldn't even tell him why she was there. The last thing they needed was for him, or the other band members, to think that the label didn't trust him. They needed to keep the talent happy, not send them into a towering rage. She didn't know if she could pull it off. She was a terrible liar. She couldn't even tell a white lie without freaking out and looking totally guilty. And now she was supposed to lie to Wyatt for months? The guy was talented and brilliant, and if his lyrics were anything to go by, really freaking observant. There was no way she could do this. It wasn't possible. It wasn't. Her phone buzzed again, multiple times in quick succession. Caleb must have figured he'd given her enough time to freak out, and was now ready to reel her back in. That was how their relationship worked. She was the one with the big ideas. He was the coolly pragmatic one, who made sure all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. She swiped back to her messages, and sure enough, his first text treated the whole situation like it was a done deal.
Caleb, I've got the Monarch condo downtown all set up for you. I had it stocked with food, and you can pick up the keys at the front desk. There's already a rental car in the parking spot. Keys for the car should also be at the front desk. You've got the limo for the rest of the night, so have the driver hold on to your stuff while you're at Antone's.
Me, is there anything you didn't think of?
Caleb, nope. You can do this, sis.
Me, are you sure? It's Wyatt Jennings. Wyatt Jennings. She'd had a million fantasies about him through the years, had spent more time than she cared to admit, thinking about how his talented hands would feel sliding over her skin. And now she was supposed to babysit him? For months? It boggled the mind.
Caleb, I wouldn't have arranged this if I wasn't sure. This is the chance for you to show Dad that you can totally handle the most badass of rockers. Don't second-guess yourself, just do it.
Me. Really? You're quoting Nike to me at a time like this?
Caleb, I was going for supportive. But seriously, don't fuck up. You won't get a chance this good again.
And there went the excitement, sliding straight into terror. Her stomach started churning.
Me. I think I'd rather go back to Nike. Thanks for the vote of confidence and the added pressure.
Caleb, you live for the pressure. Kiss, kiss. The kicker was, he was right, to a degree. In normal circumstances, she loved the adrenaline rush of solving high-difficulty problems in high-pressure situations. Loved the creativity that came when her back was against the wall and she was staring down the barrel of a crazy deadline or a crazier mess. But this was different. This wasn't pressure. This was a nightmare, a lie, a disaster waiting to happen. And thanks to Caleb, she was now right in the middle of it. Part of her wanted to text him back, to tell him to forget it, that he needed to get his ass down here to Austin right the fuck now. But there was another part of her that knew he was right, knew that him being here watching over Wyatt's shoulder would send the reclusive drummer spinning out of control again. And that was the last thing she wanted to see happen, for the record label and for Wyatt. He was too talented. Had worked too hard to get clean for her to just let him fall back into the abyss. And that wasn't even taking into account what his falling off the wagon again would do to the label. Since Shaken Dirty had to pull out of the last tour, the tour insurance for this new one was completely insane. Caleb had taken great pains this summer to impress on her just how insane it was, and they sure as hell couldn't afford to eat the astronomical deductible on it a second time. If Wyatt fucked up again, it would tank Shaken Dirty for sure, and take a huge bite out of her father's bottom line as well. Plus, she was pissed. It infuriated her that the subterfuge was necessary, that she and Caleb had to pull a bait and switch like this just to do what was best for the company. And on that happy thought, she shoved her phone back in her purse with a groan, then closed her eyes and rested her head against the back of the seat as she accepted the truth. She was going to do this. She was going to throw herself into the ring with Wyatt freaking Jennings and do her best to keep him on his game. She could only pray that it didn't blow up in her face and ruin everything. Everything she had planned. Everything she'd ever wanted. Everything she'd worked so hard for. Her whole life she'd never wanted anything more than to run her own record label. She had an eye for talent. Had a really good instinct for what the public wanted and who was going to break when. But since her father had made it pretty much impossible for her to get a job at any of the other labels, for her own good, he always said, she'd been stuck working for him since she got out of college 4 years ago. Unless she actually pulled this off, unless she actually managed to keep Wyatt from falling off the wagon and messing everything up again. If she could do that, if she could keep Shaken Dirty together, then everything would be different. Her father wouldn't be able to doubt her anymore. He wouldn't be able to pretend her contributions were less valuable just because she was a woman. And he sure as hell wouldn't be able to tell her she couldn't handle rock stars. Not if she managed to keep one of the industry's most notorious addicts from falling prey to his most dangerous addiction once again. Which meant she was going to have to put her big girl panties on and do this. She was going to have to lie to the band and figure out a way to keep Wyatt occupied and sober and out of trouble. Plus, she was going to have to do all this while also spying on the bassist auditions, because there wasn't a chance that Lee was going to measure up to the talent the rest of Shaken Dirty displayed. And since there was no way in hell she was going to let them pick a subpar bassist, she would have to find a way to solve that problem too. Yeah, no pressure at all. For a moment, she considered asking the driver to pull into the nearest convenience store so she could stock up on Cherry Garcia ice cream.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?